the news for the very last time. We all wish her well. Next on Radio 4, Henry Normal tackles those subjects so big only radio can possibly contain them. Tonight, he takes a poetic look at the topic of communication. And talking of that...
Your listening device is skewered.
Here's what's going on.
The news chopped and channeled by John Holmes.
Tank fly, boss walk, jam, nitty gritty, you're listening to the
Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty.
What are your thoughts on the vaccine?
I say no.
The World Health Organization has rejected the theory that Bruce Springsteen originated in a Chinese laboratory.
The award-winning The Skewer.
This is about giving some of the most reprehensible people on Earth the biggest platform in history.
The Skewer on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds tomorrow night at 11:15.
Now on Radio 4, esteemed comedy writer, producer and poet Henry Normal returns with the latest episode in his award-winning occasional series. This time Henry is tackling the topic of communication, and this episode was recorded with a live online audience. This is A Normal Communication.
Thank you and welcome. My name's Henry Normal and this show is about communication. Now, you're probably wondering if that was fake applause at the start of the show, like the crowd noises you get at the Premier League. No, we have a live audience watching at home on computer screens. Say hello, everyone. Now, there's only one way to be absolutely sure. Everyone shout out your bank details and your mother's maiden name. So, yes, we're recording the show using Zoom and BBC virtual technology. Now, I have been doing some other events on Zoom recently. It's not the same. Unlike this lovely BBC audience, people are usually muted and they often appear in your computer screen in little boxes. So it's like a version of Celebrity Squares, but, you know, without the laughs. Or the celebrities. So very much like Celebrity Squares as I remember it. Now, I'm recording the show in my own home, and just in case it runs on a bit, I am wearing my pyjamas. At present, I'm wearing socks with Monday written on them. I'm past caring, to be honest. No socks telling me what to do anymore. So in this show, I'm not only interested in how we communicate, but why and the nature of communication. Now, the word communication itself is from the Latin to share. That's a lovely thought, isn't it? When we communicate, we share. And in this show, I'll be sharing some stories, some jokes, quotes, some facts, and some of my favourite form of communication, poetry. Now, the communication of poetry is especially important during the pandemic. So this show will contain 1,000 poems. Well, actually, it'll contain about 12 poems, but it has the capacity for 1,000 poems. And as you know from the government, that's the important figure. Communication has changed during the pandemic. Four tiers used to refer to a cake. Lockdown used to be something in prisons. Zoom was a lens on a camera. And of course, Johnson used to refer to a penis. I say used to. With everyone currently isolated by the lockdown, I feel we need to communicate now more than ever. And I think it's only poetry that keeps me sane. A poet can survive everything but a misprint, said the great poet, Oscar Wilde. I love playing with words and with rhyme. A perfect masculine rhyme is when one syllable rhymes, like love and dove. That's masculine, believe it or not. And a perfect feminine rhyme is when two syllables rhyme, like salad and ballad, or frolic and... This is a poem for and inspired by my wife. It's called In Search of the Perfect Feminine. My wife said, nothing rhymes with orange. But before despair could befall her, I corrected Angela, or Ange. As I call her. That's the first poem, or as Matt Hancock would say, counting the letters, that's 1,010 separate poetry items already delivered. So I've been reading Wikipedia, not all of it, just a part of it. I noted one theory for the development of language in humans is that as our... What the hell's that? Is somebody playing Pac-Man? I'll rewind. I might be buffering. I don't know. I noted one theory for the development of language in humans is that as our numbers increased, it was no longer possible to groom each other like, say, an ape would, you know, like picking the fleas off each other and eating them. I mean, I've got way over 4,577 Twitter followers. way over. Now, that's a lot of fleas. I wouldn't want any pudding, is what I'm saying. No one knows for certain what the earliest human language was, or the first word. Scientists say they've traced the modern languages from English to Mandarin, you know, and all the different languages, back to a single ancestral language spoken in Africa 50,000 to 70,000 years ago. Although a recent study states that to speak and understand English, you use only the left side of your brain. And to speak and understand Chinese, you use both sides of your brain. So if you've half a mind to learn Chinese... That's not going to work, is it? There are 50,000 characters in the Chinese language, but apparently you only need 2,000 of them to read a newspaper. And of course, in English, we've got 26 letters in the alphabet, but of course, you don't need any of them to read the sun. Rotokus, spoken in Papua New Guinea, has the shortest alphabet, that's 12 letters. So that must be an easy eye test. You've no need to drive to Barnard Castle, have you? Khmer, spoken in Cambodia, has the largest alphabet. That's got 74 letters in it. Their kids take ages to sing that bloody alphabet song. The oldest form of communication is, of course, non-verbal communication. Unfortunately, that's not much use on radio. Now, the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw said the single biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it has taken place. Unfortunately, nobody heard him. Sometimes it is what is not said that speaks the loudest. This is especially true in relationships. This is called the missing page. And it made a mockery of the rest, and it became the most important of all pages. And neither of us could write a replacement. And we could never agree on its contents, only sometimes in broad outline. And there were times when we denied it ever existed, and times when I believed it to be several pages, and it became the perfect excuse, and the amount we attributed to it could never be contained on a single sheet, and if only the pages had never been numbered. And... Wow. It is now widely believed that the language we use affects how we understand the world. It's often quoted that Eskimos have over 50 words for snow, although the number of words that we use for a thing is not necessarily a guide to its importance. I mean, Northerners have only one word for pie. No. Sorry, I've got that wrong. Three words, breakfast, dinner and tea. I missed out. I forgot supper and brunch. Oh, they've got very lardy-dar in the north now. Oh, yes. Shakespeare made up over 1,700 English words we use today. Often he'd combine two words. So nobody had eyeballs before he put the two words together and made one word. And nobody had a birthplace before Shakespeare. And we have Shakespeare to thank for self-abuse. He had an hand in that, so to speak. Concerning the exactness of words, Shakespeare wrote, "A rose by any other name would smell as sweet." Well, Sex on the Beach is one of the most ordered cocktails, but I do wonder if it would be as popular named Quickie Behind the Bins. So, I don't have roses in my garden, but I have hyacinths. So it's a little poem called Hyacinth by Any Other Name Would Smell As Sweet. These hyacinths aren't tall, though with colour all are blessed. Loacinths at best. As Rudyard Kipling once said, words are the most powerful drug used by mankind. Of course, he'd never met Ozzy Osbourne. But words can be tricky. Words can be tricky. I arrived at an hotel a while back and the receptionist was on the phone, and I must confess I was a little worried when I heard her say, "Oh yes, yes, we do have double standards." Now, effective communication is very important, and it's essential that we teach the kids. And I've always thought, I don't know about you, that the Mr. Men books are patronising to women. There's Mr. Men, but the women are Little Miss. Yeah. That wouldn't work too well with communication, would it? You know, Mr. Communication and Little Miss Communication. Now, I found it annoying lately when football pundits shorten the word penalty to pen. They go, "Oh, that was a definite pen." No, a pen is something you write with. They are, of course, talking a load of bol. Now, you've probably noticed that I speak the Queen's English. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's if the Queen was working class and came from a council house in Nottingham. I was born in the 1950s in the St Anne's district of Nottingham, and the thing I miss most about St Anne's was the friendliness of the communication. Everyone was called your auntie or your uncle, and no one locked the doors. Everyone was in and out of everyone's houses all day long, you know, nicking stuff. No, they weren't. No, that's a joke. The thing is, nobody had anything to steal apart from the dustman at number three. He had everything you could dream of. He had a brand new stereogram, a cocktail bar, and he even had a soda stream. Oh, yes. It's like James Bond, but licensed to leave a trail of rubbish down your path. Now, everything seemed more personal back then. Take the corner shop. The shopkeeper would know all the kids' names. So even at the age of five, I would go to the corner shop, you know, to buy my dad some fags. And and the shopkeeper would say, "Hey, Henry, we've got some of those fries chocolate cream bars that your mum likes. Do you want one of them?" And I'd say, "Yes, mister." And he'd put it on the slate so we could pay for it later. And then as I'd leave the shop, he'd say, "See you, Henry." And the little bell would ring. And I'd go out onto the cobble streets and I'd eat the fries chocolate cream myself. There were more innocent times back then. When I was seven, the authorities there were about to demolish our street, so we moved to a council estate. Now, compared with the terraced housing, these were palaces. We had green spaces that weren't just mould. And if the water was cold, we had an immersion heater that you could turn on, and within seconds, you get your dad going ballistic. That was a fun game, that was. But now, there was no corner shop. For a few streets away, there was a parade of shops, including a Co-op supermarket. And you had to share this with everyone. Now, we had a Co-op divvy number, 117594. Do you remember yours? Our communications had become more remote. We were no longer names, we were numbers. Now, the Nottingham Council celebrated 50 years of council housing recently and asked me to write a commemorative poem. And I thought I'd best write something official sounding. So this is my poem. It's called Treatise on the Social Discourse Concerning Council Housing in the 1960s and 70s, addressed to the child of a private property owner. You'll be pleased to know that the poem is actually shorter than the title. As a kid, what I remember most is I had a place to call home. A bloke from the council painted our door, and you had to paint your own. Now, very little of my childhood is written down, so family photos are an important communication. They record your own history, but when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, you seldom had a photo taken, certainly not round our way, unless you're going to Borstal. And kids didn't have iPhones. Nobody in our street had a phone at all. If you wanted to make a phone call, you went two streets away to a phone box. You remember them? It was red, cast iron, fully ventilated. I say fully ventilated, holes where the windows used to be. And you couldn't take a photo with it. I mean, most of the time, you couldn't make a phone call with it. If anything, it seemed to be used more as a urinal. You were very often glad of the lack of windows in those days. Now, back in the late 60s, if you were a kid with a mobile phone and a camera, you were Joe 90. Because photography as a means of communication was rarer in those days, then perhaps the photos had a different significance. Maybe even people had a different significance. This is called Who Was Mr. Chambers? When I was a young boy, he would deliver clothes to our house that we'd buy on the Never Never, as it was called then. He would always say that I was handsome, even though I had a broken front tooth at the time. He was the only one who ever said that, apart from my mum. When I was 11, mum died, leaving five kids, hardship and chaos, and a black hole at the centre of the universe. He took the sole photo we owned of her, and he had it framed. This simple act of kindness saved the image of her from fading or getting lost. That's who Mr. Chambers was. Now, books were invented in the fourth millennium BC, audiobooks 6 months later. With the first one free if you took up a subscription. Initially, clay tablets were used for writing, then papyrus scrolls. That always sounds like the name of a Dickens character, doesn't it? Papyrus scrolls. Then parchment, then paper, and all handwritten, of course, until the invention of printing. More recently, computer screens are being used, and almost every type of surface. Gene Cernan, the last astronaut on the moon, just before he left the surface, he wrote in the dust his daughter's initials, TDC. And I thought, it's a shame her middle name wasn't Beatrice. That would have been quite prophetic, wouldn't it? Johannes Gutenberg is usually famed as the first to build a printing press with movable type, certainly in the West. Then, 5 minutes later, he invented the paper jam. Running out of ink, and then several new German swear words. In 1450, the first thing Gutenberg printed with his new machine before his famous Bible was a poem. I don't know whether you know this, but at the start of lockdown, poetry book sales went up, which strangely coincided with the shortage in the shops of toilet rolls. Just like to say, be careful, people, be careful. Those paper cuts are the worst. In 2004, after 34 years' work on his book, Christopher Brooker published The Seven Basic Plots, where he explained that all stories are essentially versions of just seven plots, or three plots if you watch Midsummer Murders. So it's no wonder that with repetition that certain phrases become cliché. And as William Sapphire says, clichés should be avoided like the plague. They can, however, sometimes serve us with a little modification. One cliché that I've heard regularly during lockdown is that we're all in the same boat. Now, I don't think we are all in the same boat. No. But we are all in the same storm. This is called A Second Boat Amid the Storm. A second boat amid the storm shouldn't sail too close. Waves are harsh enough without a clash of bows. A second boat amid the storm shouldn't drift in the dark. You may be their only salvation. They may be yours. Now, there's lots of different ways people have communicated over the years. Flags, drums, gunshots, whistles, bells, bonfires, newspapers, letters, postcards, town criers. Town criers are funny, weren't they? They're like a medieval Google alert. course, the ancient Egyptians had hieroglyphics, which was an early form of emoji. Even what you wear can communicate something, or what you won't wear. This is a poem called Things I Wouldn't Be Seen Dead In. I'll never wear a onesie. I'll never wear Crocs, tank tops, flip-flops, sandals with socks. If you see me wearing dungarees, kill me, please. A puffer jacket is in that bracket. But a covering for my face is ace and makes the chances greater that later somebody won't be wearing a ventilator. There are over 7,000 different human languages. Now, why is this? Well, according to the Bible, humans blasphemed building a Tower of Babel. So God brought into existence multiple languages as a punishment. So always get planning permission. Now, it certainly felt like punishment from God as a kid when I had to learn CSE French. To be honest with you, I have no idea how those French babies manage it. When people around the world speak to each other in a second language, then English is more often the main language used. It's what's called the lingua franca. Here's a poem about the use of French words in the English language. It's called Sans Pretension. It means without pretension. All right. We say cul-de-sac to make dead end sound sunny. We say nouveau rich instead of working class with money. We call art avant-garde when we don't understand it. Jumble sells our bric-a-brac, which must be French for shit. Let's call a spud, no more lies or elaborate word contortions. Chips are chips, not pommes frites or French fries. Why say haute cuisine when you mean smaller portions? No more saying we had a tete-a-tete when you mean you've just been nagging, bragging or just chin-wagging. And no more call it a menage a trois when you mean three people shagging. Traditionally, flowers are given as gifts and they communicate different messages. White camellias mean you find someone desirable. Forget-me-nots symbolise true love. And a small mixed bunch still bearing the garage receipt means you can't be arsed. Now, nature is constantly communicating with us on many levels. Bats, the non-edible ones. By which I mean all of them. Use eye-pitched squeals to connect and communicate with each other. Researchers believe that over 60% of their calls are arguments about four specific things. Food, sleep positions, invasion of personal space, and unwanted advances. So, not unlike Love Island. Communication is everywhere. We even talk to machines these days, like Alexa and Siri. And the original American voice for Siri was provided by Susan Bennett. She was a former backup singer for Burt Bacharach, who, strangely enough, wrote, "There's always something there to remind me." I wonder if Burt Bacharach knew that she'd be the voice of a machine that answers questions when he wrote, "What's New Pussycat?" Or, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" Not particularly funny, but beautifully researched. We communicate down the ages, we communicate beyond death, and often poets try to give voice to those who can't speak for themselves. Now, I was reminded of this recently when I was sat at the dentist. It's hard to speak into it with somebody else's hands in your mouth. And I lost a filling the first week of lockdown. And then I went to the dentist and he was there. He got all the PPE on and he got breathing equipment. It threw me a bit, to be honest. And he got gloves and a pressurised suit. Like for exploring the bottom of the sea. And I thought, how deep is this filling? My son Johnny is severely autistic and he uses language to communicate in his own way. Sometimes he'll say phrases like escalator tomato or a tissue golf and other words that are seemingly random and have no meaning to others, but I'm fairly sure they have meaning for him. The thing we've missed most in lockdown is swimming, especially outdoors in the sunshine. This is a poem about something we often find quite hard to communicate, happiness. This is called Poolside. Cliffy, Stuart Corf, 85 Carolines. These are all things that Johnny calls out when he can't contain his joy. This morning, there is nothing between me and the sunlight, born 8 minutes ago. A single jet makes a dash across a naked sky. One feathered soloist is giving it Percy Edwards. My son counts the liquid lengths to qualify for an ice lolly. On his back, he's as noisy as a Mississippi steamboat. He grunts like a tennis player on each stroke. Frozen pineapple is gold medal enough. My skin tone moves towards these orange shorts. Cliffy, Stuart Corf, 85 Carolines. In 1977, Voyager was launched into space. Now, it's beyond all the planets, and it's in interstellar space, and on it is a golden disc. It's not one of Ed Sheeran's. He wasn't born for another 14 years, so, you know, it only released a couple of albums by then. It was a specially recorded disc containing sights and sounds of Earth, everything from whale song to pop music, and it included greetings in 55 different languages. Now, I'm hoping whichever life form eventually finds it, they don't treat us as we've treated the other animals on Earth, particularly the domesticated ones, especially as the greeting in the Min dialect says, "Have you eaten yet? Come and visit us." A little bit scary, that one. Carl Sagan, who was the head of the project, said the launching of this bottle into the cosmic ocean says something very hopeful about life on this planet. And I think that's true. We have a yearning to communicate. I find it strange that here on Earth, we have over 7 billion people. Yet with all the communication, we still have some people who are lonely. So the thing I most want to communicate in this show is, if you get chance, try and share a human connection with someone who needs it. Thank you for listening tonight. This is my last poem. It's called "The Questions They Don't Ask on the Census." Hands up, anyone who is lonely or has ever felt loneliness. Anyone who's hidden themselves away on New Year's Eve rather than face that hiatus of emptiness in public. Anyone who's dressed up on a Saturday night and forced themselves out into the melee, only to return home, having not spoken to a single soul. Anyone who has searched faces on the pavement for a fragment of recognition. Anyone who's stood at the edge of a window in hope. Anyone who's touched a photo in remembrance. Anyone who's put a pillar behind them in the dark, against the cold. Anyone who finds a mirror the hardest place to look, or lowers their eyes when they meet someone. Anyone who aches without knowing what for. Anyone afraid of being found wanting.
A normal communication